On this episode of Marketing Mavericks, we talk about game shows, reality television, advertising, and the personal brand. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Marketing Mavericks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Welcome to Marketing Mavericks, where we talk about everything on the intersection of marketing and technology. I'm Tanya Hall, your host, and we've got a great lineup today. We're going to talk all about the intersection of not just marketing and the internet, but actually the reality TV space. And what does that mean for branding and businesses? Since so much content today is reality type television, how does that affect the advertising and the advertisers that are working? We're going to actually do this from a couple of perspectives. We're going to do this from the actual celebrity, if you will, of the reality experience. And we're going to talk about it on the back end from production to what that really means for businesses and brands. I have a co-host today, Brian Rich, who you've known on the show many times already. He is the managing director at Little M Media. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. And it's not in my bio, but I am a reality TV junkie. So I am hopefully in my element today.
You were the perfect co-host for today. there was nobody else that knows reality TV in this space better than you do. So game on. I'm excited. Our first guest, Gwen Sebastian, is joining us. She's on the road. She's on tour. She's actually on a farm right now, and she's going to join us. Gwen, you are a singer-songwriter in the country music space. And what was the album that you just had come out?
It was self-titled, called Gwen Sebastian, and that was last year. And then today I just had a new single drop called Small Town Soul.
Small Town Soul, which actually describes you as well. So you are a winner of the second season of The Voice. Congratulations, and you've done pretty well. I've been following you. We've talked before. So let's go back a little bit. What made you decide that you wanted to actually go on The Voice?
Well, doing what you do for as far as entertainment, I've been blessed to be able to be on the road and traveling and having band together for about 10 years or so. But it gets to the point where you definitely want to branch out and reach as many people as possible. And so I had seen the first season of The Voice, thought it was a really cool show, especially since it's based on The Voice, and decided, I'm going to take that chance. And I did, and went to the audition through the audition process, which was a lot longer than what most people probably think, and got on the show. And then I got kicked off during the battle round. But 2 days later, my coach, who is Blake Shelton, asked me to come back out on tour with him. And so I've been in his band since season two of The Voice. So a lot of different opportunities came from that. And that's exactly, what you want to happen.
So how did you prepare? I mean, did you prepare personally for what that experience was going to be like? Or did the producers prepare you for what that experience would be like?
Well, for me personally, I think the experience that I had out on the road and singing with my parents growing up, all those different kinds of things really prepared me to do that audition and to be on that show. As far as getting help from anybody on set, they were amazing. People ask me, would you ever do it again? And I would definitely say yes. But the producers were amazing and really great with us, really wanted to showcase who we were as artists. And I did learn a lot from them as well. A lot of it that I learned was just how to interview on television, answering things in the form of a question, including that in everything, and trying to get straight to the point on what you're trying to say, which right now, obviously, it sounds like I have no idea how to do that. But, different things like that now I take into my live show and everyday life and things like that. It just was an amazing experience. It was really cool.
So you're on tour with Blake Shelton. Can't think of a bigger name in country music. Certainly a leader. How has that been? I mean, you know, obviously he reached out to you. I mean, is this what you had hoped? I mean, is this leading down the path that you wanted to?
I mean, I never thought that that would happen at all. That was not even in my thought whatsoever. You know, I knew that if I had the chance to choose a coach, I would choose Blake, and not just because of the fact that he's a country music artist, but I just liked the way he was treating his contestants on that first season. And now I realize, you know, I obviously made the right choice. He's such a good guy. He both, him and Miranda Lambert, his wife, have been really good to me and have been helping me out behind the scenes, you know, been singing on my records and vice versa. I couldn't have asked for more, definitely from them. And they're really great, though, too, about supporting me in my individual career and trying to help me out that way. But as far as Blake goes, you know, he knows who he is. He's always been the same guy. He's branded himself perfectly, you know, and the main thing is because who you see on TV is exactly who he is. And it's cool to watch that. I'm glad to see him succeed as well.
Hey, it's Brian. I'm curious, you hear a lot about musicians who slogged their way through club dates and, you know, little touring events and things like that, and then finally got their big break. And when you go on a contest show like The Voice, that big break seems to come a lot faster and sort of a lot bigger than the typical musician. Do you think as an artist you are, you know, more prepared or less prepared because the celebrity was kind of thrust on you so quickly? Is there, you know, is there from an artist musician standpoint a benefit to launching your career in many respects through something like that?
Absolutely. It's a huge benefit. I mean, the power of television is amazing. I saw it firsthand. You know, when I had been on prior to the show, I had, you know, several thousand Twitter followers. And the first episode that I was on, it increased to, I think, around 8,000. So that just was really exponential in seeing how that all works. And a few of my friends made it to the end of the show, and they said even how each episode and how many times they're on TV, they could see their fan base grow and things like that. It's just, you know, that's just how entertainment is now. It's not just through radio for a singer. It's through every realm of entertainment, TV especially. And Blake could even attest to that too. You know, he had some number one hits prior to being on the show, but after being on the show now, he's a household name, and it makes a huge, huge difference.
You're very active on social media, and that's where I first met you. I think it was in Jessica Northey's country music chat that she hosts.
Yeah.
And you're very active, which is great. How important is that in actual, like, you know, numbers when it comes to your downloads and iTunes and that sort of thing?
I think especially for that aspect of it, like putting new music out for sales, things like that, it's probably the biggest thing, that along with touring. You know, you definitely... I love interacting with my fans, and it is me personally doing it. It's me talking to them. It's just their way of communication nowadays. It's not even email, you know, it's a tweet, it's a instant message, things like that. And it's for them to know that something is coming and it's available for them, and they can easily, you know, click on the tweet or on the Facebook post and immediately go to that song. And we've never had that before, but that's the nice thing about, you know, social media. It helps independent artists more than anything, and it's a necessary tool.
So I'm going to ask you one more question because I know you got to go. You've got another interview lined up. But I guess what would be the mistake that maybe you've made? And Brian and I were talking about this. What is something that maybe you've done that you would do differently?
Just, you mean in social media in general or just everything?
I would say, especially as far as your personal brand or maybe social media and your personal brand.
You know, there's not a lot of things that I regret about any of it. There's probably one thing that I would say that I had a tendency to do in the beginning of my career, and that's listen to everybody's opinions and take them to heart. But I now realize that that's not good. You just have to do what you truly want to do and be that artist. And I, you know, I think it just took me a few years now to finally come to the terms of that I don't have to please everybody, that music is definitely something that, you know, each of us has our own opinions about. And I just have to realize that, like I said, you can't please everybody. Just go out and be who you are and put out your best effort. And that's what I'm trying to do.
That's great advice for everyone. I think we should all listen to that. If somebody wants to follow you on social media or download your song today, how should they do that?
Well, you can, I'm on Twitter, which is GwenSebastian.com, and that's also, my Facebook is Gwen Sebastian Music. But my single is on iTunes as of today, so if you guys want to go out and grab it, it's called Small Town Soul, and review and rate, it would be awesome. I'd love to hear what you think.
And I tell you, you got a couple of songs I really like, and Miranda Lambert actually helped you write one of them. That's my favorite of yours. So anyway, thanks so much again, and congratulations. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day, you guys.
Absolutely. She's kind of amazing, and I love the fact that she actually manages her own social media. So when you go onto Twitter, you go connect with her on Facebook, you're actually talking to Gwen, and she's super busy. And being on tour with Blake, I think it's probably going to be a lot of fun, and has been a lot of fun for her. So Brian, we've got another reality guest, Arthur Chu, who is a celebrity of sorts from winning so many episodes of Jeopardy, and also considered, I think, the bad boy of Jeopardy. Welcome to the show, Arthur.
Hi.
So I have
actually really, really interesting segue from what Gwen was just talking about, Arthur. She was saying probably the mistake that she made is listening to everyone's views and taking them to heart instead of recognizing that, you know, some people are maybe not there with her best interest at heart. Your reputation is sort of you know, as Tanya was saying, you're the bad boy. You got a lot of criticism. When you hear Gwen say something like that, are you like, oh, totally, I knew not to listen to all of those people? Or do you take a different view of social?
Well, I mean, everybody has their insecurities. I mean, ultimately, we're all on some level trying to be liked, at least because we need people to like us in order to hire us or, you know, tolerate our presence. But I think it is important to recognize that you can't please everybody. And the more that you try, the less genuine you're going to be. That what social media is about is that, unlike traditional media, we want to feel like we have a real connection with a real person. So, I mean, on some level, I feel like this crazy thing about my being the bad boy of Jeopardy because people didn't like how I looked on the show, that did play a big role in people feeling like there was something to connect to. You know, I wasn't just a guy who won on Jeopardy. There was already some kind of personality in my brand, if you want to call it that. And everything else has kind of grown from there.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, what was the process like to actually get onto Jeopardy? Do you feel like there was some behind the scenes, you know, casting, if you will?
To a minimal degree. I mean, I think you can tell that they're trying to show, at the very least, like a diverse array of, you know, backgrounds, people of different races, you know, gender balance. Beyond that, though, the casting is really just sort of a minimal, like, can you present yourself on TV in a you know, minimal way? It is nothing at all like an actual reality show. They don't put you through an extensive interview. They don't make you do a pitch tape or anything. Because there's just so many contestants. And on some level, that's why I like Jeopardy, because it's a very old school show. It's just like random people who wanted to be on a game show with very little production behind it, you know.
Were you prepared for what would potentially happen to your personal brand? I mean, was that something that you could see, or is that something that surprised you in any way?
You know, the direction that it took, the whole like Jeopardy villain thing, was a surprise to me. It was a surprise that it got big in the first place. I knew I would get some exposure, and I think, like a lot of people, I wanted to be on TV, so that's why I signed up for Jeopardy. But the degree to which my story kind of became this narrative and people started projecting all these things onto it, that kind of surprised me. I was just, you know, trying to ride the wave, you know, when it first started breaking.
You know, it's funny that you got criticized for the strategy that you took, but when the computer won, right, and it was all strategy, right, Nobody criticized the computer. But yet, as a human, we tend to attack people that we think aren't behaving well. Has that been a positive for you and your brand, or are you benefiting from that in any sort of way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how viral it is outside of a certain sphere, but this latest boost of attention that I got was for an article I wrote for the Daily Beast, you know, about it was a social criticism kind of article. And I think people were willing to give me a chance and say, like, this guy blogs about the media, about social issues, because there was a sense it's just not like this guy's a smart guy because he's been on Jeopardy, but that I was very outspoken during that initial media blitz. And it was like, this guy's a contrarian. This guy stands up for himself. This guy defends his views. And that image, I think, was more key to, you know, people taking me seriously as a media figure outside of just like the Jeopardy world.
Do you have a plan, if you will, a marketing strategy for yourself now that you have this brand? And you know, when you look at that, do you say, oh, okay, I have this reputation as being a bad boy or for standing up for myself. Here are the ways I think I can exploit that. Or, you know, I am known. My face is recognizable. My voice is recognizable. You know, I should build a YouTube following because, you know, there's an audience of people who want to see me on video. Is there a thought process that you have gone through and codified in some way that, you know, that you're now sort of executing against?
To some extent, I mean, I'm just one guy, and, you know, people asked me, hey, are you going to hire a publicist? And there were people who came forward with offers, but I was like, no one who is telling me things that I really feel are authentic to who I am, that I'd be comfortable with, you know, good ideas, but not things that felt like they were me, and things that also I would have to like pay people a lot of money to execute. So I'm reluctant to, I've been online just as a regular guy for a long time, and I'm reluctant to transform my image, you know, beyond just like expanding my platform, but to transform it based on a marketing plan. I think to some degree, this like contrarian or bad boy image, it's just because I genuinely try to be sincere about who I am online. And like this recent, like my Twitter followers were dwindling, and they suddenly jumped up again because of this Daily Beast article. And the Daily Beast article was not something that people would have associated with me before. No one said, oh, this Jeopardy guy is also an outspoken feminist, you know, but that happened. So so there is a plan of sorts. I mean, I am reaching towards certain specific goals. I'm working on a book. I'm, you know, I sort of announced that a while ago, but I'll announce it again. I'm working on a book. I'm, you know, writing articles and trying to pitch ideas for different blog things, but I'm still trying to you know, keep it loose right now, because I don't want to box myself in. There's a lot of different facets to who I am. There's a lot of different facets to who everyone is. And unlike someone who I think, you know, went viral because of one big thing that had a lot of legs, the Jeopardy thing doesn't have a lot of legs. I think people still are still waiting to possibly see who I am besides a guy who knows a lot of trivia, you know?
So that we're going to talk to someone later on the show who works with celebrities and reality show folks to amplify their brand and get more following. You said that your Twitter followers were starting to drop off and that you consider Jeopardy to have sort of a limited, you know, spike or spark ability in terms of this. What window do you think you have to finish that book or to get some additional pickup so that what you got out of that Jeopardy experience actually, you know, achieves that goal? Do you have 6 months? Do you have a year? You know, do you have, you know, 2 weeks? Like how quickly does the 15 minutes of celebrity that Jeopardy gets you fade from a marketing standpoint?
You know, it's weird. It's weird because it is unpredictable. Like Ken Jennings is everyone's go-to example, and he's still a celebrity, you know, many years after his initial spark, but then he was a very unique case. And then you've got Brad Rutter, who's arguably better than Ken Jennings. He's beaten Ken Jennings twice, and he's been trying to get his 15 minutes, and he hasn't really succeeded. Not because I can see he's done anything wrong, but, you know, Brad Rutter's an aspiring actor who most people haven't heard of, and if you have heard of him, it's as the Jeopardy guy. So I don't know. I would say that my personal deadline for, you know, trying to get some stuff that really sticks is the Tournament of Champions, just because that's the next big, you know, guaranteed I'm going to be on TV. Especially if I don't win the Tournament of Champions, then that kind of, if I flame out terribly in the Tournament of Champions, that's kind of a blow to this like Jeopardy genius brand, if that is my brand. So by then, I better be known for something else, you know?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we talked about this before the show, but other, unlike this game show that we're talking about, Jeopardy, some other reality shows like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, whatever you think about them, actually do work well for the people who don't actually win. So unlike Jeopardy, you're saying, so...
Well, because so that's because they're reality shows. So on Jeopardy, if you lose, you tell one story to Alex Trebek and you're gone. It's a game show, you know. So.
Right. You know, I think I'm super excited to see what you're going to do. I think you incredibly smart a strategy that you took. And I think, you know, I'd love to talk more with you. But, you know, Brian, I mean, what do you think? Is he going to win?
Well, I mean, I can't say he's not going to win now since you put me on the spot. But no, I actually, you know, one of the things that is interesting and I first, frankly, Arthur, sort of heard about you because of the conversation that you had with Ken Jennings that I think appeared in Slate. And I thought it was, a silly controversy to start because, you know, why would we hate someone for figuring out a smarter way to win and then, you know, actually being able to do it? But I think there is an important thing that you're doing, and I'm curious or interested to see how it unfolds, which is you know, standing up for you know, sort of innovation, right? Standing up and saying, yeah, Jeopardy has been this model of a game show for a long, long time, but there's nothing wrong with forcing them to up their game because I figured out a better way to go after it. So, you know, I guess as you go forward, I'm curious to see if you're going to take on that mantra and sort of say, you know, there's a better way to do game shows or there's a better way to do a lot of these things. And that sort of becomes your brand to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on a meta level, you know, I have no behind the scenes knowledge, but Jeopardy has definitely become way more involved in social media. And there's a thing like for a long time, they didn't even really acknowledge individual contestants. And then someone said, like, for the first time since Ken Jennings, they actually, like, dropped my name, the name of a contestant, in one of their official Jeopardy account tweets. So people were saying, like, I'm dragging Jeopardy from the old game show era into the reality show era. I don't know if that's true, but certainly, I'm not personally responsible, but there's something changing there, you know?
That's incredibly important. And, you know, something else that you did, which I think is really cool, and we're seeing businesses do this and brands. When we had Patrick Byrne, who's the CEO of Overstock, he did this. Taco Bell did this. But you did this as well. You went onto Reddit, and you did an Ask Me Anything. What was your reasoning for doing that?
Actually, the Reddit AMA was Jeopardy's idea. The publicist for Jeopardy, Allison Shapiro, pitched the idea to me. I'd thought of doing it possibly because there was actually an AMA request for me on Reddit. But, you know, I wasn't sure if I'd be jumping into a hostile audience. I wasn't sure if the timing was right. But Allison Shapiro pitched it to me, so we did an actual verified AMA. Jeopardy took care of giving me an official account that was, you know, everyone knew was the real me. And that was really cool because I think my own personal voice, I mean, I've been a Redditor in the past. I don't hang out on the site much anymore, but my voice was something that Reddit people really responded to, and it was a format where, you know, I could just type as much as I want and go off on tangents. You know, to an extent, I think it's not just that I'm a smart guy because I was on Jeopardy, but that people have been drawn to me because, you know, I'm a very discursive, I'm a guy with a lot of crazy random ideas. That's what my Twitter feed is like, and that's what people kind of respond to. And so if there is a future here, I mean, I've already been writing, but if there's a future here for me as a writer or as a speaker, then I think it comes from not just the exposure on Jeopardy, but the way I've been able to get my voice out there after Jeopardy.
I would agree. You know, if somebody wants to follow you or they want to stay connected with you, what's the best way they can do that, Arthur?
Probably Twitter. So that would be my Twitter handle. It's right there on the lower third. It's at @Arthur_Effect. And that's a pun because my wife's Eliza Effect. And everyone tells me I'm using the word wrong. So then we can have an argument. But yeah, also you can find my website online, arthur-shu.com.
And I think I'm interested in, we're rooting for you, right, Brian?
Absolutely. Of course.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So interesting, you know, two different points there. There's the winning something because you're on a reality show. And I think both Gwen and Arthur kind of fall into that category of being somewhere and having some sort of skill or talent to get you to succeed, and that's where you become famous. Although I would say with The Voice or other music shows, you actually don't have to necessarily win to go on and establish a career on like Jeopardy, right, Brian?
Look, you go on a game show and you win money. I mean, if you're successful, or prizes. And I think there's nothing wrong with that being the ambition of someone who goes onto a game show. I think it's a relatively new sort of ambition of people who go on any sort of reality show to not just be on the reality show, but to actually use it as this launching pad for some future career. And, you know, increasingly, actually, I was reading this morning a little bit in preparation for the show that that a lot of the reality shows are now even going to bypass television because the interaction with the audience and the potential to build a brand for yourself, you know, really exists online and exists in social media. So the television piece may not even be all that important going forward.
Well, and let's drill down on that. We've got two other guests that are going to be joining us to really talk about the brand relationship and how brands and businesses, and especially in advertising, are feeling the impact of reality and how important that is in engagement with audience. We've got Jennifer Posner, who is the author of Reality Bites Back. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi. Thank you.
And I'm so glad we actually have you connected. And then we've got Aaron Saxton, who is the CEO of 11 Communications. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi. Nice to see you.
So, okay. Jennifer, you wrote a book all about reality television and the kind of pitfalls, certainly even on the brand side, like what brands and businesses are doing to work with producers, to cast people in these reality scenarios. Okay. What was your inspiration? Why did you decide to write the book?
Well, I have the charred brain cells to prove that I monitored 10 years of reality TV. So Brian, when you're saying it's kind of there are these new trends, it's actually not even a new thing anymore that people are using reality as a launch pad. I've monitored reality TV from when it first hit network television in 2000 until 2010. And the reason I did this book, Reality Bites Back, is because I am seeing the way that reality television in its representations of gender and race and class issues and sexuality is really focusing or functioning as backlash against women's rights, against social progress, against racial justice. And I wanted to look at the ways that not only those representations are affecting us, but the ways that that brands and companies are using product placement and using sort of strong arm tactics behind the scenes, working with networks and producers to advance those very regressive ideological notions. So we like to think that branding and marketing is a forward-thinking industry, but in fact, in reality TV, product placement and embedded branding, embedded marketing is often part and parcel with a really regressive notion of who women and men are, of who people of color are, of what it means to be successful, what it means to be an effective.
Uh-oh. Looks like we got a little hiccup up there with Skype. She did. But you know what, Brian? You and I talked about this before the show. This is something that isn't new with reality television. We've been casting people into roles for you know, since television was around. I mean, like, we were talking about Three's Company this morning and Chrissy, the blonde, dingy, you know, roommate and many, many other shows where people are cast, not necessarily because of who they really are, but what the character is for the show. We're seeing the same thing with reality TV. Aaron, you have produced some reality type shows. You've been in this business for a long time. In fact, you produced The View, and you've also worked with Jeff Hazlett, who I think has an incredible brand. What is your take? I mean, is it different today producing reality TV than it was just to regular television?
No, I don't think so. You know, advertising, look back into, you know, the 20s and 30s, like when you need to find the right looking homemaker or mom or the right guy to stand next to the car. It's just a matter of getting discovered. My issue with the media isn't the media, because we're ever evolving, so to speak. It's how naive the people are when they go into the media. So anything is up for grabs, and people are so desperate to be discovered. And yes, producers manipulate in the editing room. Totally agree. But they're not making you, let's take a Bachelor or, you know, a Big Brother or whatever. They're not making you speak in double negatives, and they're not making you call people racist names or things like that. The producers might set a tone and might create an environment so that naturally will happen. So I'm not saying they're not manipulating, but no one is forcing them to do that. And so everyone is shocked when their 1 minute of airtime is making them look less than trash that you would put out on the curb side. So, and you just fed right into the producer's wishes. So
let's agree with that, actually.
Everybody wants to jump in on that topic. Go Brian first.
Well, so the question I have, and either, you know, Aaron, why don't you answer it first, is, you know, I feel like we now live in this marketing-driven culture where even the semi-naive folks who go onto a reality show, you know, do have, you know, greater opportunity to shape their own brand or to transform whatever that moment is into their 15 minutes of fame and potentially riches or the next opportunity. Because, you know, the tools are much more powerful than they were a few years ago. You know, do people do some of these things, you think, intentionally, because the bigger the personality, the more likely you are to get noticed, and the more likely you are to get noticed, the greater bump you potentially get and have to work with? Or, you know, is it so unpredictable, and these people are in fact so sort of dumb, or the producers are so manipulative, that you kind of have to wait till you're coming out the other end of the process and just, you know, be ready to take advantage of whatever you've been cast as, positive or negative?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to represent all reality shows, and certainly a daytime TV talk show. I worked at Good Morning America and Rosie and The View and, you know, a bunch of places. So that kind of reality show versus daytime TV, and then daytime TV versus Jerry Springer or Maury or different kinds of things. Reality TV in the daytime sense, I think, extended back from those Springer days. And that's how it, you know, Bay's show and things like that. The View isn't like that at all. The View is just, you know, you may not like what everybody's opinions are, but they're there. But yes, I think that when the producers go into an editing room, they're not entirely sure who's going to emerge the focus of that next week's episode. But everybody has a different format in editing. So they cast people, even in American Idol, like they'll put on, we all see it, they put on the people that can't sing. They sign the waiver, and suddenly through editing, we're laughing even harder than that at them. It's, that might be, maybe I'm not sitting in their living room with them, but I don't love that that's happening. You know, I don't love that, but I hold the people responsible, because I think by now they're using that as a megaphone. In 1989, Pam Anderson was in Vancouver. She was a personal trainer. She went to a Vancouver football game, and she had a Labatt's Blue cutoff t-shirt on. Killer body, we all know, right? So the Jumbotron puts her up on screen. Now that's their back in the day reality TV. We're in reality. She happens to get seen. And then so many people called Labatt's, the beer company, to say who was that blonde bombshell in on the Jumbotron, that they finally made her a spokesperson. Then she posed for Playboy, and then she ran down the beach after Hasselhoff. So it's really, to answer the very first question you guys asked me, is it different? No, because that was the chain of events, just like it was for Gwen or Arthur, because those types of programming didn't exist back in the 80s.
Well, and I think you made a really good point too, of talking about the difference in the shows. And, you know, you mentioned Pamela Anderson, mentioned another, you know, blonde bombshell or not, is Jenny McCarthy, for example, who has an established brand, but who, and does speak her mind, whether you agree with her or not. She's been kind of, you know, in the media a lot for some personal choices that she's used social media to promote. And that can affect, I would imagine, marketing of that show. How closely do you work from a production level with, you know, first Aaron, and then I think Jennifer, I want to talk to you a little bit about this, but from a production standpoint, how important is it to be in step with the marketers and advertisers? Because you could potentially lose advertising based on someone's personal branding online.
First of all, I want to apologize for the video glitches that I've been having today with Skype. But I want to just say that respectfully, I completely disagree with almost everything that has been said so far about the format. This industry is extremely different from not just from something like The View, but even from something like Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer, you have incredible amounts of manipulation behind the scenes before the casting happens and through the storytelling that they want to tell.
So, Jen, we're having some audio problems again. I want to hear more from Jennifer. Hopefully we can get her connected. but you know, that's the reason we wanted her on, is because we knew that she, Jennifer, you'd had a really strong opinion. And certainly if somebody wants to know what Jennifer has to say, you can pick up her book, which is downloadable actually as well. But how would you respond to where she was taking that? Brian, what do you think? You're a reality.
Yeah, I know Jennifer, I've talked to her before, and I don't necessarily disagree with what she's saying, which is that to paraphrase and probably not so correctly, but to try anyways, that, you know, the reality television industry is not at all sort of passive in its framing of women as sex objects and its subjugation of certain groups and things like that. It is in fact, you know, a formula that they continue to perfect and exploit for ratings and advertising dollars and things like that. What I would say is, I think two things. One, you know, yes, we are somewhat captive to the programming that is presented for our enjoyment, and so, you know, yeah, we could cut the cord or disconnect and decide not to watch that, and so we do choose to watch it for a certain reason. Which puts some fault on us as viewers. But I would also say that, you know, we now live in an era with Twitter and, Tumblr and Facebook and all of these things where, you know, if and when there are these issues related to reality television that cross the line, or when sponsors act in a way that we think is inappropriate, you know, we can speak up. And I think we've started to do that as a culture, and to some, you know, effect, positive or negative. It's a stupid example, but yesterday during the USA-Ghana soccer game, I always find a way to bring it back to sports, but in the USA-Ghana game, Delta tweeted out something about the US's victory and said, you know, basically suggested that there were giraffes in Ghana, and there are in fact no giraffes in Ghana. It was a sort of stereotypical and arguably racist comment, from someone in their social media team. They were quickly jumped on. They, you know, apologized and corrected themselves, and I'm sure that there will be a series of posts and articles written now in which people learn a little bit more about Ghana than they would have, had that mistake not happened. So I'm not saying that the reality television culture is a good thing. I'm not defending it, as a fan who watches these things by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think there is an opportunity for both individual brands as well as, sponsors and advertisers and even the networks themselves, now that we're all connected, to kind of use these patterns and behaviors for something else. And if nothing else, maybe a little bit of education and tolerance building.
Okay, so I think we have Jennifer back, maybe?
Yeah, yes, for now. I can't believe this is the first time. Of course, it's the first time Skype has ever done this for me. I apologize. What I was saying before is just that this is an industry that is extremely different from any other that's come before. Most people don't understand that there is a process called Frankenbite editing that allows, for example, producers and editors to take a snippet of a conversation a person might have had on a Monday and piece it together with another snippet of a conversation they might have on a Wednesday and a Saturday. And then put it all together with voice equal links, have little snippets of conversations from three different days with three different people, and they make you make it sound like you've been talking to an entirely different person about a different subject.
So we've had some Skype issues, but we're working through those challenges because guess what? This is reality. Twit is also reality, and we can fix things, and we are. We've got Jennifer Posner and Aaron Saxton, who are both with us audio only, and our host Brian. So Brian, you've been fairly quiet about some of the things that I think Jennifer had to say earlier. What would be your feedback to her on, you know, kind of how this is changing society? I can't think of any more media person that's more into reality television than you, Brian.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with what Jennifer was saying. I think the reality television industry has a model that exploits some of the worst, aspects of our, of the way we think about people and the way that we position people sort of to make ourselves feel better and all that. And I don't want to endorse that approach. But I also think that we as television consumers and as marketers are not powerless against this. And in fact, probably now have a greater ability both with our viewing habits as well as our public amplification of our perspectives and our ability to educate each other. You know, we have almost more influence than the industry if we choose to take it. So I think, you know, Jennifer is right, and we should be very careful about what we do to celebrate things like reality television. But I also think, you know, there are a lot of us out there who are viewers who can use reality television as, you know, a teachable moment and use the things that are presented or the situations that come up in the context of reality television to help raise awareness and connect people to important issues. And, you know, it has happened on Real Housewives. There was a very troubling domestic violence issue that resulted in one of the cast members, leaving her husband, and then the husband ended up committing suicide. And there was a lot of talk, and I think some credit to Bravo for taking that issue head on and saying, we wanted to raise awareness of it. And, you know, it's not enough. Anyone who knows me knows that I don't think raising awareness is even close to making change, but I think it is an integral first step. And so for every 9 or 10 bad things or 900 or 1,000 bad things that reality television does, there are a couple of positive sides that that we could also exploit.
I absolutely agree, Brian. I think awareness raising is really important. And I also agree that viewers should be using their critical lens when they watch. It's not about, you know, never watch. It's about watching in a critical, active, engaged way, and also sort of expressing your perspective in social media and elsewhere. But, you know, before we praise Bravo, for example, for the way they handled the domestic violence case on Real House, on that show, we also need to be looking at the ways that violence against women, for example, has been built into the DNA of these shows. So, for example, when a domestic violence incident happened on Basketball Wives, VH1 actually used that as a promo, as a funny joke promo, where one of the wives had been beaten up by her new husband over the summer between shows. And so then the promo happens, and it's women making fun of her for having been a battered wife. And that's, you know, tune in when we're going to have some drama about how isn't it so funny, or it's not funny to make fun of somebody who's been beaten up. And that's not any different than how MTV marketed Jersey Shore before anybody knew Jersey Shore, before, when it was only like one episode had been aired and no one knew the show, to cut through the glut and make this show hit in the zeitgeist. MTV leaked a segment in which Snooki was punched in the face by a big beefy dude in a bar, and she goes down crying, and then they leak this, and it ends up online all over the place on sports sites and fan sites and a variety of different, you know, thousands and thousands of sites with headlines like "Countdown to Snooki getting punched in the face in 3, 2, and the number of days hours and minutes until you could see the full episode in which Smokey gets punched in the face, and then all of a sudden we all knew about Jersey Shore. We hadn't before. The first major reality show to hit network television was Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire on Fox. That was the first one. And they married, legally married, a woman on air after a sort of mail-order bride meets Miss America contest. They married a woman on air to a guy who, it turned out, not only was he not rich, which, you know, who cares, he also had a restraining order from a former girlfriend whom he'd threatened to kill, and he'd roughed up, and then they got this restraining order. This is built in. So, you know, for every thousand bad things, there are always, a couple of good things, but that we need to be looking at the holding accountable the industry and the marketers that fund and embed their products in the industry, and add just as much or more than we're looking at the one or two good things that we can take from it. And we should take those good things from it, but we shouldn't be saying, you know, the contestants are the ones to blame because they say racist things or they say sexist things. Well, Frank and Mike editing can make it seem like they've said things they hardly even say. It's much more important to be looking structurally for accountability from the networks, from the producers, the production companies, and especially, since we're talking this week in tech, we're talking about marketing, from the product placement advertisers that basically fund and popularize the industry. As you were saying, then in the beginning of this conversation, a lot of reality shows are going to start going online, but the TV piece is still incredibly important. No online show has the built-in potential to reach millions and millions of people on any one given moment, as, say, something on Fox or something on ABC. And it's not just, when we say the potential is not necessarily always come to fruition. For example, every season of The Apprentice has done worse than every season before it, to the point where it was finally canceled in the mid-2000s by NBC because they thought, well, nobody's watching this anymore. And then they hired, in the programming side, they hired a guy who came from a marketing background, and he said, hey, you know, advertisers are paying $2 million a piece to integrate their brands into The Apprentice. It doesn't matter if we don't have a lot of viewers. We're not losing that revenue stream. So they brought back The Apprentice, Celebrity Apprentice, because it didn't matter that it didn't have good ratings. It had good bank.
Okay, Jennifer, assuming that reality TV isn't going away, because I don't think that it will, I think it's not going anywhere. And so what would your solution be? How would you like to see maybe producers or people who are casting, if you will, with, you know, I think Brian Fordian slipped in some characters, are contestants. How would you like to see that differently play out in the future?
I would love to see more shows, for example, like The Voice, where you talked earlier with a contestant who has done very well for herself after The Voice. With some more shows like The Voice, which is a very big exception to the general rule of humiliation-based contests. I'd love to see more shows like The Voice and Project Runway, where real talent is actually not just the text, but the subtext of a show, where people are praised for things that they can do. I'd love to see programs that are not built on regressive ideas of gender and race. I don't want to see modern minstrel shows like Basketball Wives and Flavor of Love. I'd love to see more programs that, you know, instead of America's Next Top Model, why don't we have America's Next Top, you know, politician or, activist or teacher. It's not like there's no drama in that, right? There's all sorts of drama and pathos in any number of different kinds of stories. Hell, if we could make something like Duck Dynasty possible, then, you know, popular than anything is possible in terms of the types of people we'd tune in to see. The key is for marketers and advertisers, product placement folks behind the scenes who often pull the strings on what gets greenlit and what doesn't, to understand that we have an appetite as viewers for shows that are positive, like The Voice, as opposed to humiliation-based, like American Idol, that are positive, like and funny, like Margaret Cho's five-minute reality show that if you blinked, you would have missed it, as opposed to drawing humor from making fun of people's gender or their race or their perceived weakness. I'd love to see more reality TV that is based on progress and not backwards backlash.
So how are we seeing advertisers change or go with that, Erin? I mean, are you seeing advertisers lean more towards what Jennifer calls more compelling from the standpoint of genuine and talent-based reality programming? Or are we seeing them kind of get into the glitter moment of maybe attracting people through the stuff that Jennifer calls, you know, and I would agree with her, somewhat controversial?
You know, I don't know if you could, I don't know if I can comment on that because I'm not sure it's a trend either way. I think that companies and their advertisers and their sponsors of the shows they want to sponsor, I think that they look at the data, they look at the viewers, they look at the demographics of it all. So I'm not sure that I'm the best one to say that it's a trend or not. I'm not disagreeing with what Jennifer says about some of the reality shows are doing it right. I totally agree. Those are the ones that if I am going to watch what we're calling here reality, which I think is such a broad title that I think we would probably be doing a better service by, you know, putting them into subcategories under the reality umbrella and will probably be less than the bookends of this conversation. But, you know, as long as viewers are tuning in, as long as people are auditioning for these shows, the marketers aren't going to stop. And I'm not saying that that's a great thing. I totally, in integrity, wish that we had a classier way of expressing our medium. But as long as the devil offers you the golden fiddle, people are going to play it. And that's just not going to change. And without this platform, we all wouldn't even be here having this conversation if something. So in a weird way, we're even jumping on and playing the fiddle because we're doing a whole show about it. Where does it end? You know,
I couldn't agree more. It's very confusing, too, I think, from the standpoint of personal branding. You know, how should someone approach this and is it good for you? And we've seen a lot of people, it's worked out really well. And we've also seen some cases where it hasn't worked out really well for people who have participated in reality television. I would love to talk more about this, but we're going to run out of time. And I want to continue this, whether it's the golden fiddle or not, Erin. If somebody wants to connect with you, Jennifer, they want to download your book or buy it or have a conversation with you, what's the best way they can do that?
Well, I'm perfectly happy to talk about reality TV or other media issues at Twitter. I'm at JennPozner. The book is available for sale, and you can find excerpts and fun with media literacy tools and such at realitybitesbackbook.com. And I also do multimedia lectures and workshops on reality TV, but also on news-related subjects and other topics as well, which you can find at realitybitesbackbook.com or at the website of the nonprofit I direct, Women in Media and News, WIMNonline.org.
It has been a pleasure. Even with all the glitches, it's been a pleasure. And Erin, if somebody wants to follow you or hire your agency, what's the best way they can do that?
I'm at 11, spelled out, ELEVEN, communications.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm around. Anybody can reach me. I'd be happy to talk to everybody.
Thanks so much, ladies. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
That was nice. And Brian. This is something that we've talked a lot about in the past, and there's so much more to drill down on, whether it's the personal brand, how advertisers are engaging with this content. It's pretty controversial. I mean, I admit it. I don't know if you heard me that I that I watch some reality television, and it's I think it's a lot of opportunity for advertisers to try to understand their audience and engage with their audience better because people get really passionate about the reality shows that they watch and the characters, as you accidentally called them earlier. What say ye about that?
Well, I think we're suggesting in a lot of ways that the TV industry, reality or otherwise, is not something that we can influence, that we, you know, don't have a way to assert our will over these networks. Erin mentioned it, you know, that we are complicit as viewers in some way because we, you know, are tuning in to watch. And until we don't tune in to watch, then the networks and the brands and advertisers that support them are going to continue to do the same thing, because their job is not to be upstanding leaders of society, but to drive revenue, you know, for their shareholders. And that's fine. I actually think and have said for a long, long time that, you know, there is there's huge economic opportunity in creating better television as well, that to some extent we're being lazy by putting this, this form of reality television out there. And that market has to be, you know, soft at some point, and the viewership will eventually go away. So there is, if not an opportunity for brands and marketers out there, and for individual, you know, cast members, characters, reality stars, whatever you want to call them as well, there is an opportunity to just go out there and help to create better TV, and obviously do that online and through the social following and things that they have to raise these issues, to use them, you know, for better, and to not let the networks get away with a lot of those things that Jennifer was talking about, you know, that I think all of us would agree is probably not, you know, not okay with us, even if we do tune in to watch from time to time.
I completely agree. I think it's certainly a moving space for a lot of us in advertising, trying to understand how to engage better. And I would agree, there's some really good reality content. We talked earlier with Gwen about her experience with The Voice. She's an amazing talent, and I think Arthur as well. So we're going to have to wrap it up. I appreciate you joining me and co-hosting the show with me, Brian. If somebody wants to follow you and maybe hear about your meeting with the president later today, how should they do that?
You can always find me, maybe start on Twitter at BRIANRECH. You can go to shiftandreset.com, which is my website, and you can just, you know, Google me. There's lots of things out there, including my daily blogging of the World Cup and you know, whatever else I get enamored with or distracted by.
Well, thanks again. And don't forget to fist bump your new fist bump that we learned with the president today.
I did that in extra slow motion for internet drama benefit. Gift that for me, if you would.
Ah, we'll totally do that. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Marketing Mavericks. Lots of drama and controversy over reality and television and the advertising space. Everybody have a great day and stay tuned. Tech News Today coming right up.